greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me.
I'll have what she's having.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
Say hello to my little friend!
I'm gonna make him an offer, Ken.
Keep your friends close, but your enemies close.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Real Talk Extra. It's me, MC Adem, and I'm with Onyeka Onyekpe as usual. Onyeka, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good.
That's good, 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 good to see you. Good to see you. Okay, so a couple of things have been, like, you know, happening in, like, there's a way I see information, and when I see information or news that has been put out there about something, especially related to some of the things we talk about on this podcast, I tell myself, okay, why is this happening? For example, you know, there used to be this tradition whereby movies would be just released in the cinema, and you had to go watch it in the cinema as a tradition. And then I think as time went on, there became this evolution of where we started having platforms like Netflix. And then Netflix started doing their own independent productions, whereby they would, of course, put their money into productions, make movies that traditionally does not go to the cinema, but they just put it on their platform. And then, as you know, as we had Netflix, we started having also other evolutions of, you know, we have Amazon Prime and all these streaming services that we have now. So there became this whole thing about, okay, movies that are released that are good for streaming services are movies that are released that are good for theater. So they are what you may call blockbuster. And for me, I ask myself, what is the definition of a blockbuster movie? What movie qualifies to be shown in the theater as against getting released in on a streaming platform? And is it a business decision, or is it a thing? Because I feel at the end of the day, it has to be a business decision. Let's just call it what it is. Because will this movie get us more subscribers? Or will this movie, you know, be better in the cinema where we just, you know, recover our profits as fast as possible? And of course, the reason I said that is because of this story that broke out about this new Roadhouse movie that is slated to be released on Amazon Prime. And according to this story, the director, who goes by Lehman, you know, he sat out the premiere, or according to the story, something like that. But I don't know if it's a sit out as a matter of a protest, because the Roadhouse movie that had Jake Gyllenhaal, and it has this new UFC fighter guy in it. Not the new UFC fighter, but Conor McGregor on it. And the trailer is very explosive. I mean, if you see the trailer, you just want to see it. And then the problem is, oh, it looks like a movie that will look so good in the cinema. But guess what? It's going to be released on a streaming service, which if you're subscribed to Amazon Prime, you'll buy. You are not going to watch it in the theater. So I think it brings out this conversation about what qualifies for business. Of course, everything is business, because the only reason I feel that Amazon would do that is because they feel it will bring more money to their platform. But the directors, the makers of these movies, I think there's some unhappiness there having this guy sit out the premiere of it is indicative of the fact that he would have rather felt that it is a cinema movie. What are your thoughts on this, actually?
To me, the director not attending the premiere, you know, it says a lot. You know, I think these days, a lot of people have have lost that zeal to go to the cinemas. You know, I have a friend who ever since COVID has stopped going to the cinemas. And I think a lot of eyes now are on the streaming platforms. So I can see why they would have wanted to just, you know, put the movie straight on the platform instead of doing a cinema release. But, you know, I can tell from a director, you know, the director must have had this, you know, big ideas, maybe all those IMAX cinemas, you know, for, you know, special effects, sound mm-hmm. effects, and all those things in mind when he was directing the movie and editing the movie. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's just a tale of business versus creatives, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that, for the most part, I feel like industry owners and big names like Amazon taking over a lot of things, you know, buying up things. Like, my understanding is that they own MGM Studios now. Mm-hmm. And if you release a movie on a particular platform, you could now end up just, you know, having to have its release dates dictated to you by the parenting body. Now, because they may have other projects under their umbrella that they want to release on certain. For example, let's take an example like you can release Fast and Furious. Maybe Marvel has a new Spider-Man movie coming out and you're having Fast and Furious, which are like two big franchises. You understand? So I think what these studios do sometimes is that they want to have a certain plan of time of release so that they don't share the market. Same thing mm-hmm. with, you know, Christmas and Thanksgiving. Maybe, you know, you have a Disney movie that comes out during the Christmas time that everybody is waiting for and all that. But in this particular case now, we're having a situation whereby the movie, you see, the reason I find it interesting is that the movie is, like I asked earlier, what defines a blockbuster movie? Why is it a blockbuster? And the other is that, why is your movie a blockbuster movie? Why must it be shown in the cinema? What makes it? If I want to look at, like, you know, I don't know if you, you know, the way the kind of shows you have on the Hallmark channel, and I'm not throwing any shade on the Hallmark channel. I'm not throwing any shade. But yeah. I will not go to the cinema, eat pie popcorn, and to watch a traditional Hallmark movie. So me being a director, it can be inferred that you are telling me that my movie is Hallmarkish, if that makes
it's
sense.
Not good enough.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it's a straight to DVD movie. I can see what you're saying. You know, it must be confusing for the director. You know, you have this big project. You've let it all out. You know, you've probably done, maybe in your own opinion, your best work. And yeah. As a director, you know, you've grown up with that image of, okay, that first time when everybody goes to the cinema and there's a live audience and everybody's spellbound. And that scene that, you know, people thought it was this way, but when you cut it and put it together, it looks a certain way. I see everybody, you even see the actor's reactions, you know, and the producer that, oh, this is what I did. That whole thing gets taken away when you take it straight to a streaming platform. You know, you can't see two people's homes. You can't see how they're reacting. You don't get that feel that I think most artists want to get when they see someone seeing their work. You know, all you can do if your film does well on a streaming platform, you know, you'll see the numbers. People tell the movie was good. But in a cinema, you have that feedback that people get from going to live theater shows, you know, that instant feedback of, you know,
yeah.
I remember watching Avengers in the cinema when Doctor Strange in the Endgame told Captain America, Captain behind you, the way the whole audience gasped, you know,
yeah.
That feeling, directors probably live for that feeling, for that moment, for that priceless moment. And if you say this, if that was streamed, nobody has that.
You don't capture the moment. You don't capture the moment.
I think that's where he's coming from.
Yeah, and I can understand it, because you see, you remember when they had this was it the Wonder Woman 1984 that was released in during the time of COVID. Mm-hmm. At that time, there was no choice. We didn't have any option but to go watch it. To sit there, if you had HBO Max, then it was just pushed. But typically, a Wonder Woman movie is something that people, you know, the fans feel like, okay, it's time to just go to the cinema and go watch it. In fact, since we're talking about this, and I just gave an analogy, for me, a blockbuster movie, I feel that it qualifies, if you ask me, because you're talking about, like, if you see the trailer, you're looking at, you know, Conor McGregor, and, you know, putting out himself there, and he's bringing UFC fighters also to the cinema, which is money, the same way Taylor Swift is bringing Taylor Swift fans into the football game because of Travis Kelce. So, I mean, it's the same thing that UFC fighters will feel, oh man, this guy's in this movie, which also is a huge crowd people don't know.
Oh, yes.
It would have sold tickets, because I would want to go see that kind of thing in the cinema. But maybe for those of us who are the consumers, like, you know, the consumers like myself, our own is to buy the ticket, buy popcorn. You know, if you're going with your family or you're going with your friend or you're going on a date, whatever way you're going to consume the movie, you just go there and then you watch the movie and, you know, have your own opinion. But because I think reviewers actually are the people who, like, dictate the ticket sales. You know, did I mention that Avatar? Something. Imagine a movie like this, Avatar, The Way of the Water. You want to tell me you put it on a streaming service? No, you put it on any streaming service now. Many, you will get subscribers. But my question is, those subscribers that will, you know, maybe pay for that month, maybe turn on their Netflix or turn on their Prime or turn on their for that month, you think the movie would make more money in the cinema than in the, what do you honestly think about this? Like, do you think it would make more money in the cinema as against the,
I think cinemas is where the money is at. You know, we can tell from, there's something about watching something first and live, so to speak, you know, that enthralls people. I think that's probably why, you know, stadiums, you know, have the big pool that they have, and arenas, you know, sports is live, it's live action, you know, it's fresh, it's original, you know. So going to the cinema, if there's a new blockbuster in town, you know, if you go to the cinema, you can avoid knowing what happened till you enter. But with the streaming service, you know, it's there. It's just there. It's going to be there for a year. You know, they're not taking it off. It lacks that. It doesn't build up momentum, so to speak, unless it's one of those films that really did build, maybe like Extraction. You know, that's a Netflix movie. But for I think cinema does that, gives people the closest feeling they get to being involved in something live. You know, and for what a blockbuster movie is, you know, in theater you can't do explosions and you know you can't have Tom Cruise riding a bike off a cliff in a theater production. But in a cinema, you're in the crowd, but you're watching it on a screen. So, you know, this sort of immerses you into the movie. Right. And the top directors know how to do that. They know how to get you to feel like you're part of the action going on. You know, you're riding the car with the person, you're jumping up the cliff, you're doing all those things. You know,
We'll leave the drama alone. For me, you know, basically, like, I mean, if I'm making commentary on movies per se, I feel like, well, whichever way they are going, for me, it's just to, you know, watch it. And I mean, I know what my opinions would be of it. Would I want to go see a Godzilla versus King Kong in because when it came out, I watched that on HBO Max, I think. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, it wasn't what I expected it to be, but I felt maybe I'm growing a little older for those kind of movies. But I watched it anyway because I had you know, followed King Kong in the past. But the point being taken is that a movie director walked out, or didn't walk out, but just boycotted a premiere because he felt that his movie deserved a big screen opening as against just being thrown on a streaming service. And I feel like going into the future, the near future, the way it's going in terms of the business of movie making and filmmaking and the release of movies that are coming in the future, you will have more of these movies that people may think may get into the blockbuster setting, but eventually will just end up in a streaming service. So a lot of movie makers, you know, budget production people, I feel like they have to start reorienting their minds to, you know, however they get funding. Because I think however they get funding dictates the way this thing is really going to go. Because if Netflix votes like $100 million for a project, for a movie, I mean, they are the ones that can decide that, oh, it's a Netflix movie, but then we're going to put it in the cinema first, then it's going to be on Netflix a month later or 2 months later. I mean, that's the pattern we've seen for a lot of movies now. Killers of the Flower Moon, that we talked about just recently, it was the same thing. It was shown in the cinema, landed back on Apple TV. And of course, for those of us that knew we were not going to watch it in the cinema, we watched it on Apple. We watched it on Apple TV. So that's that. Okay, so we're going to go to what's popping in Nollywood when we come back in a second.
Mommy is throwing a birthday party this year.
I know!
Excuse, some people, I don't know how many they find themselves in the cinema of. Because, truly and sincerely speaking, they deserve to serve punishment.
Did I tell you not to come here again? Get out. Get out now!
You know, girls like that, well, they're too fine for guys like us.
What's popping in Nollywood? With Real Nolly.
So, what's popping in Nollywood? Today, we are going to be talking about The Black Book.
Yeah.
I have asked you a couple of times, what do you know about the mining industry in Nigeria? Because, you see, there are ways I want to approach this movie if I want to talk about it. And I think, you know, I can remember when, I've forgotten his name, Adebayo was playing for Arsenal. Mm-hmm. And I had this friend, and this friend, every time, we'll be angry with Adebayo. Every time then when Adebayo scores a goal, he'll say, Adebayo, everything that you've done, don't worry, I'm not angry with you again. I'm beginning to feel that way about Nollywood movies. You know? I'm not angry again. I think we are getting to a point where movies can become satisfying to watch. It is not the same hobnob, you know, just boy meets girl romance trying to copy some, you know, foreign culture. I mean, I don't know how to call it foreign culture. It's our culture now. I mean, nobody even knows what the culture is anymore. Because, I mean, if you say this is how Africans do it, you say, oh, no, this is not how Africans do it. We don't even know anymore what is normal, because I mean, we have a generation that is growing up with a phone that is looking at the global community. So if you're just looking at what's in your backyard, then you're limited. And I am just saying that because, you see, this movie, I know it's trying to say a lot of things, but at the same time, what I love about it is that it is telling a story. And it tells a story that is not just, you know, one of those point A to point B stories. It tells a story chronologically, uses very good use of flashbacks, makes very good use of, you know, sound, music. You understand? The acting was at least very superb for the most part. I mean, it had the usual suspects on it, which I know that in this game, these are the people that will deliver. They will deliver, you know, for you. But at the same time, I feel it has, it's trying to say something about, I'm looking on the one hand, the mining. I don't know that they're talking about mining in Cebu. What do you know about this, Onyeka?
Well, the mining industry, for some reason, in most African countries, is shrouded in secrecy. You know, I don't know why. Well, at least in Nigeria anyway, everybody focuses on petroleum, you know, the big one. Everybody's focused on what comes out from the soil of the Niger Delta. But, you know, Nigeria is a country blessed with so many minerals. You know, we have tin ore. We have, some people have said we have, I think, plutonium in some places. I know in some parts of the north, we have gold, you know, and some of these things are even the major reasons why we have the crisis we have in those areas, because we have a lot of bandits and terrorists, you know, focusing on bringing it out of the ground. Why there's no more information on that, I don't know. I can't give you a definite answer, but there's a lot of rumor and conjecture.
Conspiracy theories.
A lot of conspiracy
theories. That's the word you're looking for.
Yeah, and one of the main ones that, you know, have taken over people's imagination is that some Asian interest, mm-hmm. you know, is sponsoring the banditry and the kidnapping in those areas to keep people away from those areas so they can mine the things they need illegally.
Exactly, and what I heard. That's
there has been. I think I saw an article at the time, but you know, it didn't go further. It just touched on it. You know, it mentioned one of the major players in Asia as behind some of all this, and it makes some sense because, you know, you see all sorts of people moving around in certain regions of this country, and you wonder, what is this person doing here? You know, you're not a health worker, you're not a social worker. What sort of business could carry you to this point? You know, you look at those areas, and some of these areas are places that have the worst poverty indices in the country. They have the worst education, and you know, so you're like, okay, so if they're not here for this, what are they here for? And then all those conspiracy theories just start ringing in their head, and you're like, okay, maybe it's true, maybe it's not.
The thing for me is that I feel that I don't want to go out on a limb here, and in all honesty, I don't know. But I will tell you what the buzz is, because when you see a film like this and, you know, you go online and people review stuff, and sometimes you go to the regular official, you know, regulated review, then you go to the abstract review of the world of opinion, which is a dangerous place as far as I'm concerned. But you see, sometimes you cannot negate what people are saying and then what is depicted in this film. We normally encourage anybody, you know, for our listeners to, you know, maybe watch the movie sometimes. It's not like I want to do any kind of spoilers, but a bit of the synopsis I want to put out there is that this movie basically just shows or puts out a scenario that would make a viewer infer that, you know, people take up certain real estates in order to hide something that they are doing. They are mining something that is there. And there has been commentary out there that will say that, you know, I've even heard Fulani headsmen things inside this matter. You know, I've heard all kinds of things. And, you know, sometimes when you start asking some of these questions and you say, oh, why is this happening? And then you don't know. That is when the popular side starts leaning towards the conspiracy theory without them being there. And, you know, what I normally tell somebody that wants to tell me that, dude, you don't know what you're saying, I'll say, dude, I was not there. I don't know. It just appears to be something that, but apart from that, this film, that's not basically what it shows you. I think it's like, you know, it's like the Titanic is not telling you about the ship that crashed. We know the ship crashed. the ship sank. Mm-hmm. But the main story basically is the love story that happened on board the ship. So filmmakers basically can use real events to tell, you know, mm-hmm. abstract stories, if that makes any sense.
So this
movie basically does not really center around any of these things we're talking about right now, but it basically tells a story of, I think I like the way it introduces itself, a pastor turned chainsaw massacre killer. I mean, I was kind of jilted when I'm seeing someone lying on it. I'm talking about all the machinery and all that.
The guy talked to Ex Machina.
I mean, 1 second you're preaching in a church, and then the next second you have somebody lying on a table with a chainsaw going towards his midsection.
That was a good scene, though.
It was quite
believable.
It was believable. I think I like the way the personalities are introduced also, mm-hmm. you know, because you see, when you start wondering, dude, this dude that is a pastor like this, that all of a sudden is having his antics, and then, you know, he then gets introduced to you, and you know, it's like what these movies normally do when they do those flashbacks, and we're trying to talk about Kaiser Sose. And you're trying to, you know, introduce that character to make it believable to, and then we know that, okay, we're not just talking about a regular, everyday pastor guy preaching to a bunch of people. Dude is a dangerous dude. And, you know, he has been through some things and it's now kind of like turning rogue because certain things have happened to him, and it appears that, of course, it's the same epiphany that happens to a lot of people, you know. You embrace faith, and then something devastating happens, and you cannot use faith to explain why it happens, and all of a sudden, you just feel like, man, I'm just going to have to fix this problem myself. I don't think I'm trying to wait for God this time around. Yeah,
you know, yes, I kind of agree. It's one of those movies that, you know, everything was done well, and as you said, the characters, the way they were revealed, you know, they peeled back layer by layer. You know, at first you meet someone that's a peace-loving person, a pastor, and then he shows the side of him that shows he was a dangerous person. Then they explain why he was a dangerous person. And then they show how the dangerous person gets to work. And at every given stage, they show other people reacting to him being who he is. You know, sort of how it happened in John Wick, when the guy was like, whose dog did you go and take? Don't you know who that guy is? Like, you know, that's the guy they call the Baba Yaga. You know, people are afraid of him. There were similar scenes like that in this movie as well.
Yeah.
Where, you know, people that knew him were like, of all people to go and do this to, I mean, could you not have picked a better target? Why would you go and do this to this sort of person? You're now giving us a lot of stress, you know. It was lovely. I commend the director. The director was able to piece the story well, you know, make it believable. Sometimes when people are trying to shoot action movies this sort of movies in places where they're not so common, they tend to leave a lot of holes. You know, they don't fill in the little details. But with this one, you can't really say, oh, why did this happen or how did this happen? Everything was believable because everything tied into something at the end. Every character, every story, every person, everything moved into something, and it was at a steady pace.
Yeah, I think it addresses a couple of things that I know that apart from the action per se, you know, there was a lot of shooting, of course, you know, and I think they're doing very well now with, you know, bringing these scenes to life and making them believable. Unlike, you remember the days of Magic House of Macro? I don't even want to. I don't even want to. Anyway, but then at least we're here now, which is good because, I mean, I've never owned a visual effects company. So apologies. I don't mean to throw any shade. We are all trying. It's all for the better. We are in a better place right now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, no matter how you want to, you know, make an action flick, You also want to put a heavy story element behind it to give the story some weight, of which I feel this movie was not lacking in it at all. I mean, we are looking at situations whereby you ask yourself a question: how much are you willing to give to fight the power? Are you willing to lose your husband? Are you willing to lose your children to fight the powers that be that are trying to maintain the status quo? I mean, we're talking about people like Nelson Mandela, who was ready to go to jail for 27 years just to fight the power. So, I mean, for somebody like him, you want to measure and say, this is what he's willing to give. I mean, and if you look at the court proceedings during the, you know, the history, this particular Nelson Mandela's history, he said it was a cause he was willing to die for. And sometimes, you know, story elements that try to bring to the forefront people trying to fight the power and the strength of the power too, that is behind people who are trying to maintain the status quo, people who are trying to make sure that the natural order of things are maintained, as depicted in this movie. Very true. It is like kicking against the pricks. You are the one, you need a strong man, like the character that was revealed in that. Because if you don't have some kind of action hero kind of personality, who is willing to, you know, make some kind of U-turn and say, this is not right, we're going to fight against it. Once they blend this to the status quo, then, I mean, it's we are all sunk. So so the story kind of, like, I feel it addresses that, you know, like I mentioned earlier, it also addresses the elements of faith and, you know, how somebody can just have an epiphany and say, dude, I think it's about time I start solving my problems myself, because I mean, my son has been, you know, that kind of thing. So anyway, that's a good one for what's popping in Nollywood. We'll take a little break right now, and when we return, we will talk about what's next. All right, we should do more of this. What's popping in Nollywood once in a while? Because, I mean, if I see good movies, I will be very, very happy to watch. Anyway, there are a lot of them. There's one I'm going to watch. I forgot the name, but I saw the trailer. It's about, I think I have that on my radar. If I do have the time, I will watch it. It's based on a true story. If you have the name, just give it to me. But it's based on a true story. The trailer shows a kind of a bank heist of somebody. He kind of robs a bank. It's a South African story. And in that trailer, there's a bank heist. And one of the demands of the person keeping the hostages was that they wanted Nelson Mandela to be freed. If I get the name, I'll send it to you.
Silverton Siege.
Stage something. Is it Silverton Station or something?
Silverton Siege.
I put it on my list. Have you seen it?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, okay. I put it on my list. I'm going to watch it. Apart from the fact that I'm also going to...
It's a bit old, though.
What?
It's a bit old, though. Maybe like two years ago.
It's based on a true story. It's a bit old, but maybe, I mean, I'm not talking about something we may even talk about, but I'm talking about something I will watch. Because I never knew that such an event even occurred. I mean, and you know me, I'm a sucker for, once you say based on a true story, I have my Dr. Google in one hand and and I'm saying, oh, these things actually did happen. I mean, it's the fastest way for me to know about these things. But right now I'm watching that Netflix show they call Griselda Blanco, the cocaine godmother.
I was expecting something like Queen of the South, but when I saw that it was in a documentary form, I wasn't in the mood.
It's not a documentary. The Griselda,
no, it's not a documentary per se, but you know,
the one I'm watching is the one that has this lady, how can I forget her name? The one that's
was she a former Brazilian supermodel or something?
No. Okay, we shouldn't be doing this on this podcast, dude. We need to be getting our names right. If we're talking about movies, we need to be getting our names right. Anyways, But she was on Modern Family. She was the lady of Modern Family, yeah. So Griselda Blanco, the new Griselda movie. Because you know there's one that has Catherine Zeta-Jones on it, right? There's one that has Catherine Zeta-Jones. They call that one Cocaine Godmother. That was the first one that was made. And I think it's also on Netflix. But this is a new one that just came out. I'm sure it's, I think it's maybe on Netflix Global. Mm. And, but it's...
It's on Netflix Nigeria as well.
Yeah.
It's
so, everywhere. I mean, one of the most powerful quotes. You know, when a movie introduces itself and it gives you a quote like, I have not been afraid of any man, but I have been afraid of, the only thing I have been afraid of is a woman.
Pablo
Escobar. Griselda Blanco, and the person who does the quote is Pablo Escobar. You want to know, I mean, you want to know, I don't know any other intro that will make you say, oh my, if I didn't know about this, I really want to know about this right now. So that is basically on my radar. So I think, anything else you want to add to this before we get out of here, because we are already running out of time.
You know me, I'm a sucker for dark, you know, gritty cop shows. You know, Chicago PD. I recently watched The Wire again.
Really?
Yep.
You know what's going on, dude. I think that taste of movies, they kind of change as we grow older. I have to believe that, because there's a certain thing that's happening. There are certain movies I feel like, oh, I used to like stuff like this before, but all of a sudden I don't have a taste for it anymore. And I don't know if that is supposed to be the natural order of things, but but hey. I mean, if you have a taste for, like, I used to watch, I think was the only Law and Order I was interested in, I think was the SVU.
What's the nigga?
SVU. Okay. You know,
Special Victims Units.
You understand? Yeah. And because there were a lot, you know, I couldn't.
There's so many.
I used to watch CSI Cyber, at least basically. Mm. Then I was really deep into, you know, IT functioning, working as, you know, an IT person and everything. So then I was very fascinated by CSI Cyber then, because I wanted to see all the technologies. But I mean, those things now, with the kind of technologies that are out there now, that is old. That is no longer in the realm of fiction. That is in reality and everything. Dude, we got to wrap this up. Dude, we're going to be back next week, same time.
Yeah.
We know they agree. Up Niger.
Up Niger. See you guys on Sunday.
Yeah. Sunday, just before we go, Sunday is this 2 days from now. The Super Bowl is happening in America. Lucky enough, it's not happening at the same time with the finals, because it would have been an issue of where, because, and then the Super Bowl is also the Taylor Swift show. There are a lot of Swifters going over there at the same time because of Travis Kelce. But it's what
she's not performing.
No, she's not performing. You see this question. You see this question, dude.
I'm out of the loop.
She's not performing, as far as I know. In fact, she's sitting in a box with her Travis Kelce's mother, and they're going to pay $6,000 to sit in that place. That box is $6,000 a ticket, just to give it a little bit of perspective. I mean, for those that can pay. It is known, I heard it for the first time, to the only rich people watch the Super Bowl. Bro, if your TV is not broken, you might as well stay at home and watch it. Anyways, man, it's always good. We will be here again, same time next week. Onyeka, love and light.
Peace, love and light. Yeah.